This podcast is intended for investment professionals only. Hello and welcome to the CIO Call, where in tandem with Sonia's latest macroeconomic insights, we'll be chatting all things real assets related, focusing especially on the areas of commercial real estate in the UK and clean power in Europe. As an aside, you can read more about some of the themes mentioned in today's call in our CIO Spring Update, which is available on our website. So, by way of quick introduction, I'm Frances Watson, Content Manager, and I'm delighted to be joined by our CIO, Sonia Loud, Bill Hughes, Global Head of Real Assets, and Bill Page, Head of Real Estate Research. Welcome to you all, and thank you for joining the pod.
Thanks, Frances.
So, Sonia, great to hear from you. If I can just start with you, given an agreement between the Republicans and Democrats over the US debt ceiling has now been reached, how important do you think that agreement is for investors? And as we head into the second half of 2023, what should investors be focusing on next in your view?
Thanks, Frances. This is surely a very important topic because it's hot off the press, and we should be very mindful that for the time being, this is only an agreement between President Biden and House Speaker McCarthy. So it still has to go for a vote in the House and obviously the Senate. And it seems there's enough votes to support the current agreement. But again, I'm always mindful that in US politics, we should be careful of any unintended surprises that we haven't foreseen. If it is indeed going ahead as planned, then this would be quite a positive development. And positive, I'm differentiating very distinctly here, because it's positive from a market disruption standpoint. It's not necessarily too positive when you think about the economic development and the consequences of the ongoing balance between growth and inflation. So, but if you recall, during our last chat, we did call out the debt ceiling impasse as a potential market disruptor, and as such, a potential accelerator of some of the underlying trends that we have been seeing. So if we assume that the vote indeed passes through the House and the Senate, then clearly we will see pretty much a win for the Democrats. We have to call it as such, because if you look at the underlying detail, then it seems that the suspension of the debt ceiling is coming with some, you know, paused and spending cuts, but clearly nowhere near as draconian as what the Republicans had put forward at the beginning of the debate. So with that in mind, what investors really should focus on is the underlying economy and the inflationary dynamic. So the fundamental balancing act between those two, as we've discussed across multiple podcasts since the beginning of the year, is still ongoing. And we obviously have had a number of data points coming in the interim. And I think it's fair to say that core inflation does prove stickier. So services inflation is the core concern for central banks. And we've had, particularly here in the UK, an upward surprise in core inflation, which will probably create quite a dilemma for the Bank of England. And I'm sure Bill and Bill will talk about this, because obviously what we will be watching now very carefully is the transfer mechanism by which higher interest rate will hit the real economy. And we have obviously talked about the tighter lending standards, so the availability of credit has come through, but obviously the overarching transfer mechanism is through the refinancing, and that is still outstanding to a large degree for both residential and for commercial property. And that clearly is an area of concern, and I believe it comes very handy to look at what has been a concern in the back of investors' mind, but I believe will come to the fore more forcefully in the second half and 2024. And you might recall that it already has been an area of a concern when we talked about US regional banks, because clearly when you looked at SVB and the issues that arose initially, then it was mostly a duration mismatch. We had the wrong assets against the wrong liabilities. But then looking more broadly across US regional banks, it was very clear that there was a concern around balance sheet quality and what kind of assets and loans they have on the balance sheet. And very quickly, there was the question mark whether commercial real estate in particular could prove as a tricky one to stomach and to work through in the context of the expectation of a recession in the second half. That does remain our core view. So we still think that this cycle will not be very different to the ones we've had in the past, i.e. that the interest rate cycle will indeed work and that we will experience that slowdown. I think I did call out over the past couple of podcasts that there will be nuances. The US is the most and furthest ahead in terms of its own cycle. So we will probably experience the direct impact first here. But again, here in the UK and Europe, with some nuances, we do expect a similar trajectory with regards to inflation and the underlying economy. But it will be interesting, because now with the US political shenanigans out of the way for the time being, it really is all about, you know, where the economy is heading. And as I said, I think very timely to look at property, obviously more in particular, but in general towards real assets, because they clearly have been an area of increasing demand over the past couple of years. And there's probably one or two question marks whether they are already stress tested enough so that we have a clear understanding and a view forward on how they will behave in a more difficult economic backdrop.
All right. Well, you've described that picture very eloquently for us, Sonia, and thank you for that. So if I could just turn to, of course, we've got a double Bill on the line at the moment, haven't we? Because we've got Bill Page and Bill Hughes. But if I could turn to you, Bill, as head of real estate research, against that backdrop that Sonia has just described about how we as a house expect a recession in the second half, commentators saying that, you know, we've had the big declines in commercial property values, certainly in private markets, and we're beginning to see, with the emphasis on beginning to see, a stabilisation, signs of stabilisation in the market. What would you say to that?
Thanks, Francis. Yes, per the MSCI benchmark for the UK, we did indeed see two consecutive months of very small and modest positive value increases for March and April this year. But we're still cautious on 2023. Partly that's for reasons Sonia outlined already. You know, we do see this recession risk. Obviously, it's difficult to time the entry and exit precisely for these things, but that risk is very much there. But also specific to real estate, there are a couple of factors we're looking closely at. Defined benefit pension schemes, obviously in the crosshairs after the LDI crisis of last year, but the higher gilt yields get, the better their funding position becomes. And as a consequence, their need for illiquid real estate goes down in our view. So there is a chance that over the next year, 2 years, 3 years, it's difficult to tell exactly when, but there's a chance they might dispose of more commercial property, which all else equal could depress values. Sonia also mentioned the pressures on leveraged investors. And for all those people refinancing after 5 years, the swing on swap rates, even holding margins constant, is going to be quite alarming for those people refinancing, particularly for properties where income is perhaps less compelling than it once was. And that, we think, will provoke some more sales as well. Again, it's difficult to predict exactly how long this will take to play out, but we think, you know, second half of this year into next year, which could have an impact on values. But of course, although this is an increase in risk, it also might create an opportunity for those that can buy product in this environment. And we think there'll be some compelling opportunities. And there is also, of course, issues coming from the office sector, which, although 3 years into COVID and beyond, still hasn't seen values play out to the extent we think they will. And that's something else that could keep commercial property prices in general more subdued.
I was going to say, Bill, I mean, how much of some of the risks that you've already mentioned there are fully priced into property yields at the moment on a historic basis, first of all, and I suppose relative to gilt yields?
Yeah, I mean, there's several things that explain property yields in our view. I don't want to get too researchy on this subject, but we do have a model, and we look at things like real terms rental growth, the gilt yields you mentioned, Francis, lending rates to commercial real estate in the broader economy, and swap rates, of course, as things that explain a good proportion of the change in property yields over the last 30 years. Now, all of those things are quite difficult for real estate at the moment, and the models we use suggest that yields should be, in inverted commas, higher than they are today. But what I would stress is that's a model, it's not a forecast, and every single one of those inputs is very volatile at the moment. So our ability to be convictional about what it means for yields at calendar year end 2023 and 2024 is quite limited, but it is a signal that's still suggesting there are further price rises to come. So price decreases to come. So returning to your original question about caution on 2023 and what we're seeing in benchmark values, we're still cautious, and we think there's some upward pressure on yield still baked into the system.
Okay, interesting. So not out of the woods yet. So if I can turn to you, Bill, now, Bill Hughes, you've recently become global head of real assets. And that's a change from your former title of head of real assets. I just wonder what's behind the role? Are you conquering the world?
Yeah, thank you, Frances. It's a good question because it didn't happen entirely without some thought. The real assets business that we've had historically pre-2016 was pretty much entirely in the UK. And since then, it's really started to change. Our private credit business has actually become relatively international in subsequent years. So we have got private credit investments in North and South America, in the Far East, and in and across Europe, and so we've started to move in that direction. And I think really the impetus behind changing my title was when, on the real estate equity side of things, we set about having an ambition to selectively move into markets which we felt had some real appeal. And so in December of 2022, we launched our US real estate equity business. We have aspirations towards moving into Europe on real estate equity, and we have also started to build some capability and investments beginning also in renewable energy in Europe as well. So through a number of our actions, we have started to move into international markets. Global is a interesting choice of words, really. I would say that we are selectively choosing markets around the world where we really think we can make a difference and deliver some appealing returns based on the risk that we're taking for our investors and our clients. So there's some very interesting pockets that we're moving towards.
I'd just be interested, Bill, if we could look at the map of the world in terms of real assets. I mean, do we have a clear idea of where institutional investors are putting their money? Where are they? Which geographies are they allocating their capital to?
Well, I think there's two sorts of real assets investments. If I had to generalize, there's those that are stabilized and mature and provide income security, diversification, and in some cases, inflation hedging. And for those sorts of assets, they generally will exist in what I would call the more mature investment markets. UK has been strong in that respect for a very long time, certainly the US, many countries within Europe, Australasia, and Japan. And then there are other markets which are more overtly about emerging maturity, very often about development, very often about higher risk and higher return. And that's a different sort of capital. And that is a different sort of definitely characterized by the excitement of taking on high levels of risk, but some investors choose to do that. So there's different answers to that question depending on where in the world you go, Francis. But real estate and real assets and infrastructure is very much available around the world. But I would say you also need local expertise to be good at it. So this idea of being global tends to actually be a patchwork of local expertise in truth.
So you need boots on the ground, so to speak. I just wonder, as a quick follow-up question, how we are perceived here in the UK. I mean, there have been we've had a lot of bad press, haven't we, since 2016. What's our USP, Bill?
Yeah, So I'm not sure I subscribe to the idea that things are weak or it's a poor story. The UK as a market continues to be characterised by transparency. It's highly investable. There's a deep and actively traded market with all sorts of levels of professionalism around it. Contractual ownership is not an issue in the UK. Legal advice is good. Availability of finance. So it functions well as a market. But as Bill has mentioned, we've clearly seen a correction in prices, and it's by no means clear to us that that has ended. So I would think about the UK as being actually, in the eyes of some investors from overseas, it's becoming an interesting opportunity based on market pricing. And there are always going to be investors who look at that as being the principal source of how they behave and when they enter markets. On the other hand, I think there are long-term investors who would see the UK as being very appealing because of its predictability in terms of ownership. And for those that can see very long-term, by which I mean, if not multi-generational, multi-decade, you know, the cycle is something that you can see through, and you can be investing in highly predictable assets, as I said, in real estate, but definitely also in infrastructure that can be appealing in a portfolio context.
Okay, all right. Well, thank you for that overview. So let's go from the UK back to the US, Sonia, if I may, because we started obviously talking about the debt ceiling, and that seems to have been what has hogged the headlines recently, doesn't it? But of course, the other area for investors has been China. And I remember at the start of the year, everyone got terribly excited about China, as did the indices and the performance, which was quite stellar. And now it seems to be great disappointment that it's not recovering as well as it should. So what implications for global growth more generally then do you think there will be if and when the Chinese economy slows?
That is a very important point, Francis, and in particular now that potentially the debt ceiling is behind us and will not create a major dislocation in markets, the focus on growth, as I said at the outset, will intensify because we need to understand where we're heading. Now, you're spot on that the excitement that was, arose earlier in the year and towards the end of last year was that China, because the COVID cycle was so different from the one that we've experienced in Europe and the US, would hence be slightly counter-cyclical, right? In the global economic cycle, we would find an area of growth that potentially could help and dampen the economic downturn that we inevitably experience in Europe and the US on the back of the rate hike cycle. And this was, as we recall, obviously on the back of a pretty dramatic shift in the COVID policy of China and a complete reopening, which has led to some similar pattern. So if we recall early in the year, the initial reopening was actually quite similar to what we've experienced in other countries on the back of the normalization. But you're absolutely right that the most recent data is not showing the level of follow through that we would have expected. And hence all eyes, if China were to not deliver the level of growth as the market currently expects, does this mean we have to revise our global growth forecast downwards? And that would, if anything, just weigh on investors' expectation because you would probably have a deeper recession than originally anticipated. Because if you think about a country like Germany or Europe in general and the level of exports going to China, if this is not materializing as expected, then you simply would have a more dramatic slowdown than currently anticipated. I do expect that investors will now shift simply because the attention will move from the US and the political debt ceiling debate towards the fundamental drivers of global growth, and China will play a far more important role. We have to wait and see what the subsequent data now over the following months will show. By the way, real estate is a big part of the Chinese economy and obviously has been one of the weak areas based on regulatory change and the interference of the Chinese government. But there are several pockets and obviously all eyes on their drive towards a more consumption-led economy versus a manufacturing and export-led So lots to look out for, but it will not change the narrative. It will probably have, it will determine the magnitude, not the direction of travel. That's how I would put China. But it's very obvious that investors will need to consider if they have direct exposure to Chinese or emerging markets, how that could impact those investments. But for the global story, it's the magnitude rather than the direction of travel that China will determine.
Okay, all right. So let's go back to property sectors then. Let's drill down a little bit more now that Sonia has painted a very comprehensive macro picture for us again. It's not all doom and gloom at the moment, though. I know you're cautious, but there are pockets of resilience. Cheer us up, Bill, and tell us what they are.
Thanks, Francis. I'm glad you asked that question, because I wouldn't want to leave your listeners with the impression that it all is gloomy for 2023. And yes, indeed, when we look at the real estate sector, some signals are giving us cause for concern. But as ever, there are different drivers for different sectors within real estate, different segments within those sectors, and indeed different risk styles that one could invest in. So there's all sorts of things going on. A couple that I would highlight is in residential. So specifically build-to-rent residential. We continue to see good performance. And so there is rental growth continuing into this year, even when yields are perhaps more sluggish or stable, but that rental growth is sufficient to lift values. We're also seeing good performance within industrial sectors, and that's a part of real estate we continue to like for its long-term fundamentals. Part of industrial is what we would call multi-let estates, so small estates in urban areas, and there's very limited risk of new supply for those estates and a long-term demand story, which is quite convictional, which we like. Parts of retail as well. After the repricing of last year, things like supermarkets look better value now, which are interesting. And even within offices, which we could talk all day on offices, but it's important to recognise there are parts of the market that are still seeing rental growth despite those well understood risks. And if you are, you know, high quality in the right locations, you can achieve rental tension. So there are differences, sector, segment and strategy, which we need to reflect upon. And it provides opportunity for investors.
Okay, and as well as the sector differentials, I should also mention, and you've alluded to it already on the call earlier, Bill, as a house, we've recently diversified into the world of unlisted infrastructure equity, and actually more specifically, clean power. Now, as I understand it, you've got investing in this area typically means a lot of cash is tied up for quite a long time. And by quite a long time, I think I mean 10 years or more. Why should investors show that much patience in your view?
Yeah, thanks, Francis. So a lot of what we do in real assets is necessarily long term, and that's partly driven by the intrinsic illiquidity of the asset class. So it may well be difficult to invest in terms of accessing markets, but it's typically the case for many investors that we look after that they necessarily are looking at long time periods. Some of that is because they're looking to have illiquid investments in a portfolio that provides diversification versus other asset classes. It often is about liability matching. So for pension funds, they're thinking about liability matching over 20, 30, 40, even 50 years. And so investment for the long term is what they would want to do. Certainly as a manager of real assets, we're concentrating on assets that we believe will be valuable and productive over long time frames. That's sometimes about how we manage the assets. It's sometimes about how you select them in the first place. But we're not typically trading in and out of assets in short time frames. By the way, when you invest over long time periods, I think you could be more relevant to society because you can contemplate how you can make a positive contribution in a location, in a community, over a time frame where we're looking for long term outcomes rather than immediacy. And so that's actually, I think, valuable to our underlying investors, who in many cases are pensioners and savers, who themselves are typically maybe walking around the built environment of the UK, and we can actually make a positive contribution with the capital that we're investing. So renewable energy, you know, really interesting investment opportunity. Europe needs approaching €1 trillion euros of investment firepower, which most of which will come from the private sector. So it's a really interesting opportunity that will help the decarbonisation of Europe, help with the energy transition. So, you know, we want to be front and centre of that. When we think about investment opportunities in the wider real assets market to fill out some of the things that Bill was talking about, we're also making a virtue out of how do we think about ESG? How do we think about urban regeneration? What are the sectors that are going to be the most useful and better returning into the future? So we think about things like residential. Bill mentioned life sciences, which is making a productive contribution to the economy. Last mile logistics is something that we've been specializing in alongside renewable energy. So we're very thoughtful about where we're investing, and long-term thinking is actually very much at the heart of how we do it.
I mean, you've highlighted a lot of opportunities there, Bill, and rightly so, but I'm just wondering, where are the risks in your view?
Oh, the risks will be about being in the sectors that have got a long-term future, working with the counterparties that are strong enough to withstand economic shocks or the passage of time. All that we do in professional investment management is to make calculated selections where you're looking for the right balance between risk and return. That there is no such thing as totally risk-free investments. I think actually what's happened in sovereign debt around the world in recent times can remind you of that. But we're here to make thoughtful, insightful decisions where we're going to get a good return.
Good balanced answer, and thank you for that. And that leads nicely on to the question I'm going to ask Sonia now, that you know, the curtain's falling, isn't it, on the era of easy money. Should investors start thinking or rethinking, Sonia, how they allocate capital against that background? And is there anything else you'd like to add?
That is a really good question to end the call on, Francis, and I think ties really nicely to what Bill has just said. So it's not just that the interest rate backdrop has changed and clearly is one of the big goalposts in an investor's, you know, spectrum and analysis, but there's a lot else going on. We haven't even touched on the geopolitical shifts that are currently underway. We haven't touched on the shift towards a decarbonized economy, of which, you know, obviously the fund that Bill has just mentioned, or the investment in infrastructure that is related to the decarbonization, will fit into. So there is a real opportunity in what we believe will be a reset within markets to start thinking about those longer term structural shifts that will inevitably create a lot of investment opportunities. And it's understanding those structural drivers, because for the investments that Bill and the team are making on behalf of our clients, it is the credibility of the framework that governments and policymakers will put in place. It's understanding those frameworks, it's understanding the need and the drivers behind those structural shifts, and then making those investments on the back of this. But we all know, we have all seen the numbers, that the amount of capital that will be required in order to decarbonize the economy inevitably will create an enormous amount of opportunity for investors. Likewise, in public markets, it's similar. A reset always creates opportunity to reinvest. We haven't touched on AI, which clearly now dominates the headlines and might well be a real structural shift within the workforce, within industries. It creates opportunity. Everything has two sides, right? There clearly is a threat for a large number of industries and jobs, but there's opportunity on the other side. And if we consider the potential opportunity and the way it could enhance profitability, it's enormous. And that's, a crisis is always, the idea to reconsider, to reset. But I think from an investor's point of view, it's ideal to do that. But acknowledging that a large number of the main ingredients in our investment analysis have changed. And that is the biggest challenge, is understanding the consequences of these fundamental shifts and how they will interfere or support the investment thesis of specific areas in the market. And that's what we're here to support, and we believe is incredibly exciting, despite the fact that there is quite a bit of doom and gloom out there. But as I said, the opportunity will outweigh eventually, and it's understanding where to go in order to, you know, to capture that.
And I'm very pleased you mentioned artificial intelligence there, Sonia, because that is the subject of a forthcoming podcast. So now to the bit where I ask you what you've been watching, reading or listening to recently. Bill looks terrified. And I'm just going to kick off and say, a couple of months ago, I saw the film Where the Crawdads Sing, and I loved it so much. Quite a deep plot, I think you'll agree, Sonia, but really beautiful in parts. And the book I'm also reading is also beautiful. So that's me done. I'm enjoying that. How about you, Sonia?
I have read that book as well, and it's just amazing. It's absolutely beautiful. So. Yeah. Two things, because clearly it's the end of football season and I have a 10-year-old boy. So we have been watching not only the Premier League finale, which was decided already, although not quite at the bottom, but the German Bundesliga for a change was incredibly tense and was decided in the final 5 minutes, which was we were sitting on a beach in Mallorca to watch the final bits on my iPhone. But on the side, I've been reading a really interesting book as well, which is called Surrounded by Idiots. And it's about the four types of human behavior and how you can learn and understand how to engage with them better, which I find is really interesting, because we are all different. And the way how sometimes you feel far more naturally connected to some versus others is what the book is trying to distill and to make it easier to how you deal with the other types that are not that naturally aligned to how you are.
That sounds fantastic, and hopefully no reference to me. Okay, so what about you, Bill Page?
Thanks, Frances. Yes, I'm troubled by how to place this one. So I've just started reading a book called Ashes to Admin by someone called Evie King, and it's about the caseload of a council funeral officer in Bexhill in East Sussex, which is quite a difficult and strange subject for a book. It's basically someone who organises funerals and cremations for people that die with no family. So that sounds sad, and it is sad, and it's maudlin. So a strange topic for a book, but it's written by someone called Christina Martin. So Evie King's the pseudonym. It's by Christina Martin, and some of your listeners might recognise that name as a long-standing contributor to the letters page of Viz magazine. And so I'm intrigued by the mixture of someone who is a funny, witty person, but has a difficult job, and her account of it. So I've just started it. I'll let you know how it goes.
Oh, OK. Sounds intriguing. OK. And last but not least, Bill, what are your thoughts?
I can't help but say I've been watching Succession with great excitement. And for those that don't know, the final episode of Succession took place on Monday this week, so I'm done with that now. But that's what I've been watching. Very trivial, I know. On a slightly more cerebral track, I've been continuing to listen actually to Cautionary Tales by an individual called Tim Harford. He writes in the FT quite a lot, so some listeners may have heard come across him there. But he writes typically about 40-minute podcasts, and they're about the unexpected lessons that come out of events that we think we know all about, but if you actually dig beneath the surface, there's nearly always something very interesting going on that we haven't thought about. So I'd recommend Cautionary Tales by Tim Harford for those who haven't done that.
Oh, great. That sounds great. I will have a listen. Well, on that note, thank you all so much for your time today. I hope our listeners have enjoyed listening to this particular podcast. And thank you to all of our listeners for listening. Thank you. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of legal and general investment management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal & General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website. Copyright 2023. Legal & General Investment Management Limited. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying and recording, without the written permission of the publishers. This material is issued by Legal & General Investment Management Asia Limited, the licensed corporation BBB 488, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission, for professional investors only.